first Port Townsend Public Workshop to order for the May 12th. And we'll start off with the first item, which is the marina and boatyard surveys. Pete would like to say something before we turn it over to port staff, and then we'll do our presentation, and then I guess Bertram has some that he'd like to suggest, and so then we can start the discussion. Go ahead, Pete.
You know, I was reviewing a lot of the email traffic going back and forth about the survey, the accuracy of the survey, and it just occurred to me, I wanted to kind of frame the context of this discussion a little bit this morning, and because I think we're all about, you know, we're setting new rate policy, and I don't believe that's what we're doing with the survey. And so the discussion came up because of the environmental fee, and because a lot of discussion happened over the shipyard rates and the boatyard rates. And so as I look at the survey, a couple things occurred to me. One is, I think whether we look at the WPPA survey, whether we look at this survey that was completed, or your survey, Bertram, that you've worked on, or some of the surveys that the other marinas have worked on, Bellingham being one example, regardless how we slice it, we're a little bit below average. Any way we look at it, we're a little bit below average. The other thing I think that's important to look at is our occupancy rate, which is 100%. We are full. And you know, I'll tell you a little story. With Puget Sound Express, I didn't raise rates this year. I kept them the same. In fact, this is the third year we've had the rates the way they are. And my fuel price has gone up considerably. I also incorporated a new boat, so my operating costs have gone up. And as a result, I'm actually suffering a little bit right now because I didn't consider the fact that I probably could have raised rates as I compare with all the other operators that are in the area, and I'm now being hurt a little bit by my operating costs. So I'm not saying that rates are going to go up or go down, but I am saying that in the context of how we look at all of this, it really isn't so much about, you know, where we're at on this survey precisely in terms of average, but it is about you know, what the market will bear. And if we're at 100%, then we're definitely offering a good deal, I think, in terms of the mortgage rates. I just want to, as I end this, say I'm not saying that means, oh, we're going to go run and jump up mortgage rates. But I think that number is as important as the survey, the occupancy rate of the different slips. So that's all. Thanks.
Okay, so now Larry will, or the port staff will present their part.
Well, when we decide to do a survey of the marina plus the boatyard, the marina part, Julie volunteered, you know, she works at Morridge to do the phone calls, etc. She started back in mid-March and ended it, I think, the second week in April. I know the question has been asked how much staff time has been put in. We didn't code this as different. We treated this as normal work. I think, Amy, you asked Julie on Friday, just an estimate, and what she was doing, since she's a mortgage clerk, is if she had some downtime between customers and phone calls, she would make a call to a marina and log in the data and go back to doing mortgage things and make another call, you know, 20 minutes later, that sort of thing. She probably, 5 days was it, she thought? About 40 hours, maybe total, over those 4 weeks. I know Amy, myself, and Jim, I don't know, I probably put 4 or 5 hours, mostly just double-checking figures, as emails came and went, that sort of thing. And so I don't know, I don't know what kind of value that is. It's just stuff that we do normally anyway. We always have done a marina survey, not this extensive, but every year we, you know, look at some of what we consider our competitors and that sort of thing. So anyway, what you have in front of you, the last update was Friday, and really the only thing that changed was Port Orchard on this thing on Friday. And there's a couple more graphs, bar graphs that just kind of show, in one case, the lowest and the highest marinas. And then we did the mean and median, and of course showed where Port Townsend was. And then we did one bar graph of some locals, Ludlow, John Wayne, and Hadlock, in Port Townsend. And I'll save the boatyard one for later, just to talk about this. And I think I sent my email on Friday. I was trying to get to what you just said more articulately. You know, the value of a survey like this is, where are we relative in the cosmic order of the universe when it comes to marinas? And you can see that we're below average, below the mean. And what we tried to do, what we told Julie, was to ask if she was going to bring a 30-foot boat to Marina X, what would we, for long-term moorage, what would she have to write the check for? So it's not just the moorage itself, but if you have base electrical, if it's a public port, you got to add in leasehold tax, and things like that. And so that's what we tried to get. And how good is the data? I'd say it's pretty good. You know, if, depending on who you contact at any particular marina, if you call the next day and get somebody else, would you get the same number? I don't know. Some marinas change their rates on 1 April, some change on 1 May. So with her making the calls in March, you know, that may throw us a little bit of a change. But I think, again, in the cosmic order of it, it really isn't going to change the position that much. In fact, we did a test. We took the most expensive marina off the list and the least expensive off the list, and it didn't change our position at all. When you have this much data, as anybody with any statistical background, you know, it's really going to be a drastic change to cause it any movement. So with that, I don't really have much more. It is what it is. And Jim, Amy, you got anything you want to add? You did the spreadsheet, so we have all this. So if there is any more changes, you know, we can easily update these charts. I guess what staff would like from the commission is, and getting to what Pete was just talking about, where do we go with this information now that we have it? And if we tweak it a little bit more over the next couple of weeks, I can almost guarantee you the position isn't going to change that much. We may change, you know, the average might be 50 cents more or a dollar less or something. But I see it as more of a tool for the commission, along with a whole bunch of other information you'll be given as the summer goes on, as part of the budget process, to kind of mull around and see where you want to go with a policy on moorage or boatyard, et cetera. And again, I think the bigger discussion will be on the boatyard, which is kind of a unique animal. But other than that.
I want to say one quick thing. My comments just originate from me.
Yeah.
These guys did not have any conversation. I haven't had a conversation with them about this at all. But it just was my reaction to the emails and to watching this survey go, and to being a port tenant. I'm a tenant just like you guys. So that's where these comments originate from.
Okay, and back to how this is actually going to work before we have your presentation. But just to answer what a thing that Larry brought up, is that my idea for starting this thing in the first place was because of the environmental fees, what started it, and the issue of fairness. And so I wanted to make certain, even though we all get fees we don't like on our cell phone bills, we noted that when we were getting renting equipment from A1 Rental, we had environmental fees on it. So you know, we all don't like those things. And so we wanted to be fair. And so I wanted to figure out, are we fair? And that's what this thing started with. So what we're doing now in this workshop, and just to kind of clarify a little bit, we're going to talk a little bit more on lighting and meeting procedures. The way it works is that workshops are for the give and take of information, like the presentation that Bertrand's going to make, the presentation that Larry made. That's when we can hash and discuss and talk about things like this. But basically, this workshop is to inform the commissioners so that we have the information that we need in a business meeting, which is where motions are heard and legislation is done, that we can then act on it in a business meeting. So this workshop is to get the information out, we can discuss it, and then at a future point in time, in a business meeting, and it doesn't have to be, well, we did make one caveat to our business meeting. We won't have to have it be discussed twice. So in other words, we'll when we actually choose to move on these rates and to change anything from the status quo, we'll have to have it discussed on the agenda at one business meeting, which would open the discussion, so the people that are interested that might not live here, that only use the agenda that they see published on the website to understand, to inform whether they want to come to commission meetings or not, will be aware. So on the second reading, then we'll have a chance to actually do the policy change that will incorporate either different rate screens, leave them the same, get rid of the thing, but that has to be done in a business meeting. And this is not a business meeting. This is the discussion meeting. The business meetings, the comments are limited because basically it's just a meeting for us three guys to weigh the information that we've gotten from things like emails, this particular workshop, and then make a decision on that. So with that said, that's what this is about. So now, Bertram, it's your turn to go ahead and give us some more information.
Okay. Well, thanks. I hope your mind isn't made up, Pete, on the basis of your argument. You know, this whole thing is started, of course, because of the environmental fee, and you said that you didn't feel comfortable rescinding it, even though you understood our position on the environmental fee without and looking like you were giving something special to the mortgage tenants, and that you felt that you wanted to look at all the rates around Puget Sound and take 90% of an average. And that was, you made that point quite clear. And I understand that this meeting is not to determine rates, but just to get the information about where we stand so that you can feel more comfortable about where you're going with the environmental. So I have a tilde amount of information. We also have done, we had eight people in our committee, and we all got the numbers, we called around and got the raw data. And then we looked at the ports data, and we compared them. And then we went back and reviewed them and recalled people to compare the data. And there were, I'm sorry, I only have three of these. We broke my budget with copy costs here. But for example, Port Angeles was $60 higher than they really are. And the reason was that the person who got the data looked at the utility hookup, which was $55. And I called and I talked on two occasions to the port manager there, and he said that's a one-time fee and only for the new docks, so that when you get if you're on the new docks and you want electricity, you have to pay an initial $54. And after that, there was a $5 fee, but there was not an option. But the fee, there was no the fee for electricity was optional in the older part of the Port Angeles Marina. In addition, there's a glaring difference in Port Ludlow. The figure used was the non-resident fee, which is significantly different than the resident fee. The resident fee is very close to what we have here. And I called the port manager there and asked them how many residents and how many out-of-towners, non-residents they have. They have over 80% of their marina is residents. So basically their fee is based on the resident fee and not on the non-resident fee. The outliers on this study are John Wayne. I mean, there are many differences, and I will show you in a minute, but there are four outliers in the entire study: Eagle Harbor, John Wayne, Port Ludlow, those are the three big ones. And so when you take all of Kitsap and you look at Eagle Harbor, it's way higher because Eagle Harbor services Port Seattle, and the rest of them are based on Kitsap. And when you ask why is John Wayne $30 higher than the Port Angeles, it's because the income in that region is much higher. So the John Wayne is an outlier. these, let's see, they have a bunch of these. people.
So there are, we found 39 errors out of 87 figures from the port. We found 39 of those were in error. So that was a significant.
Do you have a sheet that shows which of those 39 are?
You know, I do. I sent that to Larry.
The sheet right here.
I sent that sheet, yeah. And you can go back and confirm them.
But do you have a way? I have no way of knowing how Port Townsend rates.
I will show you. I will show you. That's just the raw data.
Just a quick question. In that, even with 39 areas, are we above or below the average?
Okay. I will answer that.
Right.
Average is, we should talk about average because that's very important. There is average and there's weighted average. So, let's see. Can you? Would you mind sharing that? And then the rest of you can pass these out. Can you take a look at those? Listen, just look at me a second. If you take 30 marinas at 400 and 3 marinas at 300, add them together and make an average, you're going to come up with 392. If you lump 400 together as one and 300 together as one, that's 300 and 400, that's 700, that's 350. There's a $40 difference. And that's what this chart shows. This chart shows that the really is what they call the weighted average. It's used to skew.
How about this chart?
Yes. So if you want to be fair, what you want to do is you want to average all of King County, all of Kitsap, all of each of the counties, and then average them. Rather than, because otherwise you have 33 Seattle samples, and you have 3 Jefferson County samples. It's going to skew it way towards the higher levels. You follow that?
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question
yes.
on that? So, like when you're talking about John Wayne Marina,
yes.
and you said the income is higher, so that kind of skews John Wayne as opposed to Port Angeles.
Yes.
So, but that's all Clallam County.
Wait,
let me finish.
Okay.
So wouldn't you in turn say, okay, let's look at District 1 in Port Townsend in Jefferson County and compare that to the marina rather than compare the whole county, because the whole county is quite different in District 2 or 3 than it is in District 1.
You know, I don't know if that information is available. I have information. That's a good question, but I don't know if we can get that data separated, what District 2 is from District 1.
Right.
I will tell you, in this marina, 74% of this marina is by 98368 zip code. So 26% is out of town. But 98368 covers the 3 counties, so it's a little hard to get that information on. But if you go to the next page, I think we're going to start to look at some comparisons here. What you have here in yellow is the mean family income for Port Townsend for all of the counties. And then you have the average of the average. I'm sorry, before we do that, can we just turn back? I wanted to finish that one thing on this page. You can see, for example, a 30-footer. If you took the average of each of the counties, it's 243 for a 30-footer. If you average all of them, it's 267. So there's a significant difference. And I put underneath there what the Port Townsend rate is. So if you took an average of the average, true, Port Townsend is below the overall average by $19. And I mean, using Steve's formula, not that we're talking about formulas here, but 90% of 10% of 243 is $24. If you took it off, we're actually above what your target fairness level is. And that goes down the line. So from a statistical standpoint, and I run this by statisticians, really the fair way to do this is to go by counties and average the counties rather than go for the individual. Otherwise, you don't have an accurate weighted sample.
So the blue one's the average of the counties, the top. The average of the average, that's average of the counties?
Yes, it's the average of the average, yes. And the red is average of all the marinas, which is the one that Larry presented. And then the green is Port Townsend. Okay, so now we can go to the next page. And that's, it will show you the yellow is the mean family income in sequential order, starting with Clallam, which is about $43,000, Port Townsend, which is $48,000 a year, and King County, which is $70,000. And these, the colored lines are the various sizes of the boats. Underneath, you can see, I put for just your edification, that if you took out, if you separated John Wayne, which I say is an outlier, from Port Angeles, the feat that Clallam drops down significantly. But be that as it may, you can see just from that chart, if you draw a line, that, for example, Jefferson is Jefferson is higher than Kitsap significantly. Kitsap, the mean family income is $55,000. And you see that on the yellow line. If you go across to Kitsap, it's 55. Their mean family income is $55,000. Their rates in general are a lot cheaper than the rates for comparatively than Port Townsend.
Now, for me to go home and study this, Bertram, I can't see where you have Kitsap at $55,000 median income. Is that on here somewhere?
On the left hand, on the right hand side, yes, on the x-axis, the vertical axis, you see 50,000, 50, you see, that's the income. I have it also in a much easier chart to read. And
he's saying it's the yellow. If you follow that yellow,
yeah,
that's the 55 right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm afraid I'm not following this crap at all.
Don't look at these lines here. Just look at the top of the yellow part.
Yeah.
And then go.
That's the medium income.
So what are those other lines for?
This might be easier to see. Well, this you can study that, but you'll see. And it's worth studying to see that.
Well, what are those other lines? To me, that purple line says Kitsap, right? Is that
no? Kitsap the purple means... line. The purple line is 40-foot boats.
Oh.
The green line is 30-foot boats.
Okay, got it.
The red is 25, and this is 50-foot boats.
Got it. Okay.
Okay? Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see. Now you want one of these? You guys want to share one here? Mind sharing that? And here's one for you, Larry. Let's see.
We'll share.
Yeah, if you don't mind sharing this, that would be very helpful.
No, this is a workshop.
So what this one says, I gave away, I need one copy to that. What this says, it takes the annual...
Which one are you looking at now?
This one here. What I've done here, what we've done here, and I couldn't have done this without Lon, who's a spreadsheet guy, it's great, and the other folks who gave a lot of input. But what you see here is we took the annualized fee for each of the slips. For example, a 30-foot, let's go back, Jefferson County. They spend 5.9% of their mean family income on a boat. And if you look at the second page behind that, Pete, you'll see, if you lift that up, it shows what the actual person pays each year in Port Townsend, in Jefferson County. You see, so for a 30-footer, a person is paying $2,688 a year for their slip. You see that, Steve? For in Port Townsend, the 30-footer.
Yeah, 30-footer, 2,688.
Okay, now go down to Kitsap, 2,460. Port Angeles, 2,484. Seattle, 3,848. So, yes, is in a way, Port Townsend.
What, excuse me, what's Jefferson and San Juan? Are those
Jefferson, I included Hadlock, Ludlow, and us.
Okay, and then so Whatcom County, San Juan County. Okay, got it.
You got it? Pierce is quite expensive. In general, we did a map, but I thought it was a little too confusing. We actually put a map, and you can see that the first, when you start in Seattle and go out, the rates drop the further you go from Seattle, as do the incomes.
Can I ask you a question about that? For
yes.
For instance, the Port Townsend Comprehensive Plan, as early as 1996, recognized that one of the reasons that Jefferson County and particularly Port Townsend's income numbers were seemed so low in comparison to many other communities was that there was a large, or at least a significant portion of the demographic in Port Townsend that depended on transfer payments that wouldn't necessarily show up in reported income. I'm wondering if there's any way to get at that, since the Port Townsend really has a I wouldn't say a unique demographic, but certainly one that distinguishes it somewhat from some of the other jurisdictions that you've identified here.
I don't know. I know the mill pays $50,000 a year. Mm-hmm. I know that Julia's top people pay 50. So that's top. I know that if you walk the yards, you don't see high rollers there. Yeah, the guy next to me he could buy all of us with his income. But the other guy is Dave, who works for at Admiral Marine. And if you look at the people on the dock, most of them are not high rollers. They're people with modest incomes. For them, they feel very strongly that the income should be matched to the mean family income. So I'm saying that from an absolute sense, you're not really that far off on this chart from the actual figures. You're not far off from other communities as far as the cost of owning a slip. From the standpoint of the mean family income, that's the bar graph that you're looking at there, Pete. It shows that we are actually one of the highest. That from mean family income, we're one of the highest. You can see that Port Townsend and Clallam, which has Clallam has a very low income, $43,000, but not in Squim Bay, but in the rest. But you can see that we are Jefferson is the highest in this bars than any of the others in terms of mean family income and the cost of owning a boat here. You see that the bar, if you look, for example, at Port Townsend, Jefferson, well, let's say Port Townsend, let's talk to Port Townsend. To own a 30-footer, it's 5.59% of their family income, or 6% of their family income to own the boat. If you slide all the way over to King County, it's 5.7. If you go to a 40-footer in Port Townsend, it's 8.1% of their family income. What does that mean? That means if you have a $50,000 income, that means you're spending $4,000 of that income on mortgage.
Got it.
In Seattle, you're 7.6. So that from a standpoint of the income, we're disproportionately high. We're not talking about adjusting your rates, but I mean, if you want to feel comfortable with rates, people feel strongly about this. In 1 week, we've collected 110 signatures for this petition, which says that the mission statement of the Port of Port Townsend clearly states that the port must ensure maritime access for the community. The mortgage rates must therefore be based on the ability of the average taxpayer in Jefferson County to pay and not based on the rates from more affluent communities such as King County or Seattle. So people feel very strongly about this. I mean, I think that if you ran your business in Seattle with the same income, you'd be in trouble.
So I'll just ask you, I can see where you're going with this, Bertram, and that's great. So Christopher has a Choi Lee 40 foot down at Hadlock. He pays $40 more a month for that mortgage down there than he does if he had permanent mortgage up here. He would love to be here. Mm-hmm. The waiting list is years. So what do we say to the people that are on that waiting list? That, well, we're going to cheapen it up because we should do that for the medium income. And so that way the list is even going to grow stronger because people want to get there. What do we do with that?
It's a complicated question, of course. One of the part of the questions is Hadlock is high, but then they don't have the federal support to keep. They try to sell that thing. They're just hanging on. the waiting list. It would be nice if we could give us, if 74% of the Jefferson County is in this marina and 26 is not. It would be great if we could give preferential. And I've thought about that a lot, Pete. I've thought, well, maybe once a month you have to come in and renew your thing. Then if you're in Nevada, you can't do that. If you're in Jefferson County, you can come in and keep it going so that you get a fair advantage to get into the marina. So that is a question. I know that they would love to be here, and we all would love it, because this is a better bay. There's no question about it. Even though our docks are rotten. Half the docks are already rotten, sinking and everything.
How does it Hadlock?
Yeah.
And Port Lethal.
And yeah, so I don't know about it, but you see, those guys are in trouble because at least we have the power eventually to fix those things where they don't. So, I mean, it's a worthy issue to discuss. I wish there were a way. Larry feels that you can't because of federal funds take preference. And but maybe there is a way, a clever way to do it. I'll think about it, but it's... It would be really great to do that.
It's a federal law.
It's a federal law, but, you know, like everything, there are ways to get around things. And we should try and figure out a way to do that so that we can have more Jefferson County people here. But what we don't want to do is, and we're not asking to make this thing cheaper. We feel like it's there. It's nobody's complaining about the fee. The only issue here was that Steve did not feel comfortable taking away the environmental fee. And
as did I. I'm right with Steve on that.
And I mean, we need to. You need to consider that in the cost. I've been very careful to show you that the amount we were paying in environmental fee was disproportionate to what we were getting in. And I've thought about, well, maybe Pete's right. I mean, if we really looked at what the cost is for the environmental fee, maybe you were suggesting the $5 rolled into the fee, our fee, but it's something we can discuss, and maybe that is a reasonable way. And then sit down the road, once again, look at the actual proportions once you get a good business plan and can really manage what the cost of maintaining the new fee are. Nobody objects to that. We just object to the fact that this is a backdoor way continually raising these fees on an agreement which we made a great deal of effort, tremendous amount of effort to put together with John Collins. And we had a handshake on it. We trusted you to do that. So.
Okay. Well, thank you, Bertram. We've got other people who want to talk to.
Okay.
Thank you, Bertram.
Okay.
So I can see you put a lot of work in this, and we appreciate it.
I just sit out.
Okay, Lon?
Just one comment about the waiting list. And one thing that occurs to me is there are things floating in our slips that never leave the harbor, never leave. In fact, probably could not leave the harbor because they're not actually boats. What they did in Seward was they had the rule that if you're renting a boat slip, your boat has to leave the harbor, you know, once or twice a year. And you can simply enforce something like that. Some of these little floating houses are trying to pop up like mushrooms. That problem might go away. That's a consideration.
Under its own power.
Yeah, I think that you've hit on something that is, I know I'm interested in pursuing, and I think I've heard other people. I think we've all talked about the fact that there, a lot of marinas have a test that they make boats do, and that's that they go out under their own power around a buoy and back. And we actually have that in our rules that we could start up and have people do that. We've been trying to be nice guys and and let people not. But I think that it might be time to relook at how nice we want to be.
So I got a question on that one. Is there a connection between a boat that can't leave the slip and people that have slips but no boats? We have a number of people that own, that have a slip, but they don't have a boat. They pay because they don't want to lose the right to put a boat there. So
that slip's empty. My goodness.
You double rent that, and I think that's wonderful.
Right. That's true, Rob. Yeah.
That's got it.
Goes to income.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way to put it too, because the boat that's a derelict sitting there, we can't double rent that
right.
slip. So, yeah.
There are, and I totally agree with you. And since I've been here probably about four times, I've urged the commission to allow staff to do what we'll call a buoy test. In this case, it'd be very easy. You know, we got another marina at the end of town. You know, if you've been out sailing, we know you've been out, then we'll check you off the list already. But if you haven't, then go down to Point Hudson. They'll give you a little chip proving that you showed up there in your boat, and then sail on back, and you're good to go for a year. We have not had a commission willing to do that. And I can tell you there's probably a half a dozen boats out here in this marina that have not moved since I've been here. But they pay their monthly rate religiously, and unless we enact something like a buoy test, our attorney, because I've asked her, she said, if they're right with the Lord on their monthly mortgage, I can't just arbitrarily evict them. We got to have a reason. So
I think it'd be good to find out if this commission is up to that task. So I suggest we put that on as a first reading in our next meeting.
And it kind of has a little bit of overflow into the boatyard. I can show you one boat that's been there since 98.
Are there other marinas that have guidelines that use that, you know? Are there other marinas that have already set those programs up and done that?
There are.
It's good to get those.
We know what to do. It's just,
we just got to have the commission have courage enough to do it, which I think we need to put on the agenda to see if we do. CJ.
With direct response to Commissioner Hinckley's comment about the relationship between the full, between the large waiting list and rates, I would suggest that one of the things that needs to be explored is the option for dry storage within our port system. Number one, it's a very environmentally sound practice because it, for the most part, eliminates the need for anti-fouling paint on boats. Number two, it's particularly useful for people that only use their boats a few times a year. Number three, it frees up a lot of space for people that do use their boats frequently. And when it's properly managed with a trailer as opposed to a travel lift, it is a very, very efficient use of land space. And I don't think that it would require that much capital for us to actually develop a program like that, including secure storage for those boats so that it's only accessible in certain hours in daylight or during some sort of normal working hours, as opposed to the 24-hour access that we enjoy now in our other facilities. Secondly, I'm a bit confused because a moment ago I thought I heard someone say that we actually did have a rule within our existing rule system as to the buoy test, but that it's not enforced. Did I hear that incorrectly?
I don't think so. We have that on the rule, right?
Do we actually say buoy test? On our mortgage agreement, all mortgage tests, their vessel is supposed to be manufactured for navigational purposes. And in our rules, houseboats are not allowed, as are also city ordinances that are not allowed. So that's not a big issue. You know, we allow somebody to finish construction, but he can't stay here kind of thing.
All right, so an operational...
We have one that's grandfathered in. When they sell it or whatever, it's going to have to be...
So an operational requirement is not currently included?
It is.
It is.
Right on the mortgage agreement. Yeah, your vessel needs to be maintained.
But the moorage agreements require a proof of operation.
That's what we haven't done.
Right.
Yeah, we just take your word for it.
Thank you.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry, what's your name?
Yeah, my name is Jim Heumann, and I'm a moorage tenant. I've had a boat in the marina for several years. And I just wanted to particularly respond to Commissioner Hinckley's thing on the waiting list. And I think it would be really easy if the port was a commercial business to solve that problem. You just raise the rates until there's no more waiting list, and that goes away. But clearly the port is not a business, and the port is here per the mission statement to serve the citizens of Jefferson County. So I think it's a hard problem. But to just say there's a waiting list and we should just raise rates till we get rid of that, I think does not serve the citizens that the port is here to serve.
Yeah, and so two comments. One to you, CJ. You know, look at Sea Marine and what they've done with dry storage. I mean, they've been doing that fairly aggressively in terms of squeezing boats in, and I think you're right on with that model and that comment about that. And on that, I'm certainly not advocating getting rid of the list, the waiting list. I mean, again, I'm a moorage tenant too. I don't want to see my rates go up. I think I say it more in the sense that if you look at Port Angeles, you know, the port just gave it to a business, and that business manages it as a business. So it's a very different model than what we do here, and so I am sensitive to that.
And then, actually, I wanted to make a comment, too, regarding that waiting list. You know, as you said, that we're here to serve the citizens of Jefferson County. Well, my doctor, who's a citizen of Jefferson County, is really irritated because he'll never get a slip because he wants the port to get a slip, and so he's not being served by us by keeping the waiting list so long he'll never get on. So in other words, it's not just the current mortgage tenants, but the people that want to get a mortgage slip. So there's a port that I can't remember the name of it, but there was a joke at one of the WPPA conventions that we get a slip in there, and it's a slip for life because it was so cheap that nobody ever gives them up, and so you just forget ever trying to get a slip there because it's just not such a thing. Rob?
Well, I'm just going to say, I've been a tenant since the 80s, and it's been a full house with a full list. Nothing has changed in that regard for 30 years that I'm aware of, and you know, we got on the list, we waited our turn, we got our slip, as people have been doing and are doing. I know what happened. We were all fearful of them opening it up at one time as things came up before, and being, I think we were preferential at one point when we found out we couldn't be, when we took some federal money. But the big fear is the fat cats out of Seattle who would love to park their boat up here permanently, and all they have to do is come and go. And they're willing to pay, and they can, but they're not residents here. This is our county. You represent us. You got to be fair. I guess that's all I can say.
Yeah. So I have a question. How do you think it is, Rob? What I mean, you are kind of the crux. You represent the crux of.
I'm on my edge of being able to continue to keep my boat here. I don't have any alternatives. I have.
Right.
You know, it's a price we pay because it's a hobby we have.
Right.
It's a hobby, and there's no question but it's basically been fair in that respect. If you know, being able to double park in the summer and all of this, you know, that's just great. That's free rent. Mm-hmm. And on talking about the test with the boat. Remember over the Alloway, boats had to get out. Past the breakers and come back. That was their litmus test. Now this is a few years back, these slash sort of houseboats, you know, they ran a motor from somebody, they had a bracket on the back, and they powered out and powered back, and they met the test. I don't know what to say about that, but
right.
Anything in the water with the WN number, how are you going to say they're not a boat?
Right.
Okay,
I can see a problem. That's all I can say.
Right. we'll have one more comment, and then we have two more items to get to on our agenda. We've spent an hour and a half, or hour and 15 minutes on this. So, Bertram?
I have two comments. One is the fact that the, if you look at the budget, there's almost $500,000 of excess revenue from the marina already, and they're able to take $120,000 out of that this year and put it into a reserve fund. So it's not like you're hurting from getting the marina revenue. It's just a question if you want more. The second question, the second comment I made is Steve Chapin's boat is out of the water. Chris Grace has sold his Virtue, and he's talking now about selling his other boat here. Phil Andrus and they are a good thing of getting rid of their boat. People are leaving not because. Because the economy is such, and they're at the age now where they're retired, and if you're on a fixed income, they can't even afford these mortgages. So in a way, nature's taking care of replacing those slips just because people can't afford those things anymore. And there's a lot of people leaving as a result. Thanks for allowing us to participate in this.
Great. Thank you. It was a good topic. All right. So the next topic we have is the port. Strategic Advisory Committee, a riveting talk.
You want to talk about the boatyard at all?
Oh, yeah, we still have the boatyard. Yeah. I'm sorry, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we need to get into it too deep because we are short on time. But there's a lot of things to think about, far more than the marina survey. It was really difficult, and Jim did most of this. I did part of it. Boatyards are so different. You know, a lot of them are private. It's just like going to the Ford dealer with your car. You drop the car, one of the keys, and they'll call you when it's done. They don't allow do-it-yourselfers, et cetera. And that was probably the biggest thing. So the yards that you see on the survey are ones that, to some extent, some more than others, like we're probably the most lax on allowing boat owners to do their own work.
Why you say the most open?
Most open and last. but we those that did not allow the boat owner to do any work, we didn't even put in the survey. We wanted to at least try to compare species of apples to apples. And yeah, you have lay days, you have environmental fees, et cetera, et cetera. Some incorporate all their fees into their base rate. And they change that as needed. Others still call out the separate fees. And the biggest thing, though, is probably the lay days. And we've always known this. Every February, the Northwest Yachting does a boatyard survey. And I'm hard-pressed to ever find that a boatyard as inexpensive as we are. And we hear it from the boaters that come down, especially from Alaska and Canada. When you ask them why they came here, it's because we're cheap. And I think the survey really shows that. And again, just like with the marina, we're not saying we need to increase rates all that much, but I think this is the case. You know, on the marina, I think we're about where we need to be. You know, we may need to change our base fee to $50 because that hasn't changed since day one, you know, because garbage has gone up and things like that. But with the boatyard, I think we need to take a really, really serious look at it. I think we can still maintain our place and our activity within the industry, but go a lot further in recouping our cost. Right now, we're not recouping all of our costs from the boatyard. And I agree with Bertram, you know, most of the environmental issues are from the boatyard, and that needs to be, you know, fully addressed. We're going to have a lot of work. You're going to have a briefing this afternoon from Al on our green building contract to get on with our level 3 response, which we have to do. The clock is ticking on that. So we don't need to go into any details. You know, I think we need to digest this, and maybe we'll be doing some budget workshops here over the next couple of 2-3 months. You know, and have this in front of us as we discuss how we're going to move ahead on the boatyard.
Looks to me like we have a ways to go to raise rates to still be the cheapest.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm saying.
So,
go ahead.
I did a lot of thought to this and poked around the yard, and I just wanted to throw something out for the commissioners to think about with the yard rates. it looked like from the survey that you have room to grow as far as rates. And I also remember Pete's comments that nobody likes these extra charges, you know, when you rent things. And when I talked, for example, to Julia, the 3% extra, when she wants to haul out Olympus, they said, well, you paid the 3%. So she lost 3% because it was that was a little bargaining chip. And so she's doing it for a loss, the haul out, as a result of that. So, but what I would say is one way to approach this is to say, okay, that the what we're facing here is a storm, a level 3 stormwater compliance issue, which we think, at least initially, is going to cost $250,000, and we have the money in the reserve fund. So, maybe one way to figure out the yard rates would be to say, let's say we take it out of the general fund, $250,000, and we stage that in replenishment at $125,000 each year for 2 years. So we look to see if we can make the yard rates improve by $125,000 with the environmental and everything for each year. At the end of the first year, if it looks like the stormwater thing is actually more than $250,000, you readjust it. But you keep the rate increase focused on the job at hand, which is to get stormwater improvement, and use that as your basis rather than a draconian raising of the rates just to raise rates. Comment?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay. So now on to Port Strategic Advisory Committee, PSAC.
Mr. Eric. So a few weeks back, actually I think it's been maybe a little bit longer ago than that, we teed this up initially with you, at least in passing at a workshop meeting, and feel that it's unresolved and need to continue the discussion with you today. It's probably most useful to start again at high altitude and remind everybody kind of how the advisory committee came into being and what its specific charge is. The Port Strategic Plan was developed in 2010 in significant part to facilitate a conversation, a more open dialogue and active listening on the part of the Port and Commission to its constituents. And that document, which was ultimately adopted, contains basically strategic level guidance, policy guidance for the Port. It, in late 2013, was kind of incorporated within a couple of chapters of the Port's strategic plan. So it now is one kind of integrated document. There was an advisory committee that was formed at the time, Steve, that you're very well aware of, as is Bertram, that helped to develop the policy direction within the strategic plan. And the plan itself indicated that an advisory committee would be formed essentially to continue that conversation and to ensure that the goals and policies of the plan would be reviewed on a recurrent basis to make sure that it still was reflective of kind of widely held community values. And secondly, to recommend amendments if necessary, and then to kind of weigh in on how the Port was doing in terms of successfully implementing those policies. We first convened the committee in late 2012 and early 2013, again, sort of a reformulated committee that prepared a very detailed report and recommendation to the last commission. And the commission then responded, as you recall, in October of 2013 with its own document responding to the concerns raised by the advisory committee. The resolution that established the committee is very specific in outlining the charge for the committee. It is to annually review the progress made in implementing the plan
and making recommendations concerning potential plan amendments. And secondly, serving as a sounding board on an ad hoc basis to review and provide input concerning potential new port initiatives and business ventures that basically aren't anticipated in the adopted policies. Last year, the committee identified a number of areas of concern and also kind of weighed in because it was early enough in the process to provide some guidance as to the port's capital budget priorities. And it identified both the ramp project that the port has now undertaken, as well as the Point Hudson Jetty as capital projects that were worthy of being prioritized. Both of those projects are at least in process to an extent or another. We've made application for boating infrastructure grant to assist in renovating both arms of the Point Hudson Jetty, and we're seeking RCO funding also through the boating facilities program for funding support in with the boat ramp here at the Boat Haven. We, in the wake of last year's process, had a number of folks decide that they no longer wish to serve on the advisory committee. We probably have the ability to put together a quorum if everyone shows up this year, but that would require basically a 100% turnout of the folks who still are committed to serving. I guess the basic question that has arisen at the staff level is this working the way it was intended to work? The committee was formulated to continue the discussion that started with the strategic plan, and also to help the commission and staff make better recommendations and better decisions. We don't really have much in the way of new capital projects to run by the committee this year. Last year when it met, it had basically one recommendation for a potential plan amendment that the commission decided to table. And that recommendation essentially was to kind of revise the emphasis in the strategic plan from growth and development to a sustainable and healthy local economy, basically kind of shifting the emphasis and the language away from growth necessarily to a healthy and vibrant local economy. That was, as far as I'm aware, the only specific recommendation regarding a plan amendment. The committee focused most of its effort on assessing the port's efforts to implement the strategic plan and provided very detailed recommendations and had concerns that were identified as to how the port needed to do a better job in terms of implementing its adopted policy. So I guess the question is, we're at this crossroads. We have vacancies. Brad, District 2, I think, is up. I've not heard back from Ted again, unless you've had any additional offline conversations with him. District 2 would be basically, would serve at your pleasure and would not require a majority vote of the commission. The other vacancies on the committee that I think need to be filled still are community environmental, where Tony Petrillo has vacated his position, and also marine trades, where Diana Talley has resigned. We have some ideas for folks that certainly we would like to contact and would suggest to you if they expressed a willingness. I think one of the two vacancies, we have somebody identified who would be willing to serve. But again, the question before I think staff and the commission is this working? Is the charge too narrow under the resolution? Or is it working okay? And do we just need to fill the positions and get on with the 2014 review and assessment?
Boy, I've heard from Ron, who's the boat ramp guy, that, and he said that he would like to serve, and he thinks it's a useful thing. His problem is he doesn't think it meets enough to be really useful. You know, in other words, they don't have enough. They don't have that. It's a huge strategic plan, and just to get up to speed on what's in the plan takes a lot of time. And then, if you only have one or two meetings a year, you don't feel like you have any continuity with what's going on or that you're affecting anything. And so,
then we've had others like David Hero who's willing to do it if it doesn't too often.
So. It wouldn't seem like quarterly would be out of hand or something like what we're talking about here.
I wouldn't think so. I think that would be more like what Ron was suggesting.
However, it seems though if that were to be the decision, I think there would be a need for additional guidance from the commission as to what their specific charge should be. Because as it stands now, it's primarily to review the adopted policy and, number one, determine whether amendments are necessary, number two, assess our efforts to implement the plan, and then to kind of weigh in on an ad hoc basis on projects that weren't anticipated in the adopted budget. So either the mission needs to be kind of expanded, otherwise I don't know that we really have sufficient work for the committee to do under the resolution as it's currently adopted, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I'll talk to Ted again. He sounded like he was changing his mind, so
mm-hmm.
I'll probably see him the day later today.
I mean, this is, to be candid, and Bertram, I welcome your input on this as well. It's problematic, you know, when the port doesn't have like a whole laundry list of potential capital projects that haven't already been kind of reviewed and considered by the committee. Is there utility in the committee meeting to basically assess the goals and policies and mission, or is it primarily the mission to kind of review and assess the port's efforts to implement the policies, or something different entirely?
You know, it's kind of a combination, Eric. You have to realize the history that the thing that broke the camel's back here was the administration building that went ahead without turning to the and saying, okay, we have $1.5 million, $1.4 million coming in. What is the best, is the use for that consistent with the mission statement of the Port Townsend and its goals? And it just went forged ahead without that. And that was kind of back, the straw that broke the camel's back. I think that the strategic plan, the committee has this beautiful option for you to be able to tap into the stakeholders that you serve. And to get the feedback from them. And so in a way, it requires a certain attitude on the part of the commissioners that, yes, we welcome your input, and we will consider it, and we need to have a healthy dialogue. I think if that was there was that kind of teeth in it, then I think people would be more enthusiastic about participating. And then, as you say, like it came up in the last meeting, where you said, well, what would the strategic plan committee think about that? And that was a great question, but there was no strategic committee at that point to say, you know, we want to make sure that we fulfill the mission. What's your input on it? So I think that structuring it in a way that allows that to happen, I do think that this is a very complicated organization report, and to try and do it in three meetings, it's just it's really hard.
What do you mean by three meetings?
They had Eric had three meetings where we reviewed the mission, we reviewed the things, and then we reviewed the report. So it was like consolidated, and it's so hard to come up to speed for people that aren't port watchers.
You know, I'm thinking that basically to respond to what Eric's concern was, is this still the mechanism that we need to use to do this? We've got the strategic plan, and I remember you and I were in the strategic planning committee, and we wanted to keep this thing that we were all having a good kumbaya moment about going, and I'm just not sure that, you know, like you said, three meetings a year is probably enough, especially since we don't have a bunch of stuff for them to do it. Perhaps we could more effectively accomplish our same goal by, instead of having by having the strategic plan as the guideline, but then instead of relying on the stakeholders in the committee, when we have an issue that includes those stakeholders, just say, let's get some stakeholders here to talk to us at a workshop. I think that might probably be a more effective way or a better way, unless we want to have a whole bunch of meetings. And if that's the case, then we'll probably start finding a bunch of new candidates, because I don't think a lot of them want to go to a lot of meetings. And
seems like we're talking about two different things, too. I mean, one is PSAC, which I think is fairly clearly outlined by Eric in terms of what its duty is. And another is like what Steve is saying with the ad hoc committees. And I mean, I know we're going to get airport people this afternoon at the port meeting to talk about AWOS. I talked to one of them this morning, or left a message with one of them this morning, because it's kind of like, okay, we've already kind of gone down this rabbit trail in terms of looking at AWOS, and yet now they're just kind of getting on board to deal with it. Whereas if we'd had a structure where we had an ad hoc airport committee, more than just like Scott on the strategic committee, that could say, oh, yes, we want this or we don't want this, and bigger than Bill, too, you know, something that has a wider variety of people that are affected by a specific issue. So maybe there's one for the airport, Quilicine, here. And I think the other thing that is I'm questioning and wondering how we proceed forward is, you know, a lot of what's driving us and you know, should be or shouldn't be, you know, how do we justify a lot of what's driving us is the money that's available. And I just added it up this morning. We have potentially $2 million coming in 2014 that we have applied for in grants this year alone. That's tremendous. Can you imagine? I mean, that's $2 million that we don't have to come up with rates or with taxes or with mortgage. And that's for projects that are going to happen here at the Port of Port Townsend. And so and a lot of that money is specific to like RCO boat ramp or FAA AWOS or the breakwater. And a lot of that we get caught having to push it through, having to rush. Okay, do we do this? Because we have to get these grants out by, you know, the end of April. We had to get those grants out. Good job, Eric. I mean, Eric pushed some really big paper to make that happen. And so I'm kind of questioning, how do we, if we want to get that kind of input from a specific group to like the airport, how do we get that in a timely way that works well with the timeline of grabbing an opportunity like the FAA money that moved really fast? And I don't know that that's a specific spot where PSAC is.
I think your point is really well taken, all of your points, and I think that the magic word here is specific. That I think if you had a committee that met to understand what their charge was, but not to go through, okay, now we're number eight, how are we doing on number eight? And it's kind of exhausting. But just so that everybody is dialed up in speed. And then when you have something comes along, the commission can say, well, let's run it by the PSAC and see if we're following these things. And if they come together and answer your question, great. If they don't, bad on them. At least you made the effort to do that. And so I like the idea of just calling the committee together when you need questions, like in a workshop, and going through those things specifically. But just have a once-a-year meeting where everybody kind of understands what their charge is and what they're going to be asked to talk about. And it could work very well.
So that cleared up, Eric?
So I'm a little confused. So you're saying, Bertram, to have a single committee, like the PSAC committee here with the districts and the stakeholders, and that this committee should be called for like an AWOS issue or a breakwater issue, or rather than have like a group of pilots that we would call for the AWOS issue, or...
Well, I think the pilots are going to be certainly much more invested in that issue than the... But the pilots are not aware of what the mission statement and the process of the port, which is established. So you're going to have two of them. So you say, this is what we're doing, and this, we'd like your input on this. And you can come to this workshop and give it if you want. If you don't, well, that's okay. But mm-hmm. at least, you know, you have tested the waters there, and then using the specific stakeholders to on the issues themselves. It could work, just so that the body knows what it is that they're supposed to be doing. Does that answer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what does that mean? Does that mean reconstitute the PSAC and, I mean, you know, get the vacancies filled?
Well, it certainly means filling the vacancies and reconvening.
More meetings.
Reconvening, and as Bertram has suggested, I think it means, again, kind of having a little refresher on the role and purpose of the advisory committee, checking in. I think I would anticipate that the meetings this year, at least the general meeting, not any ad hoc special purpose meetings, would potentially be a little bit easier than last year, because there may still be some carryover and some familiarity with what the mission and purpose is. Again, I didn't hear last year any real pressing desire on the part of the committee as a whole to undertake significant revisions to adopted policy. It was more, as has been suggested, you know, issues with implementation of adopted policy. So, again, that, you know, we either need to to get a group of experts is going to be very difficult to make this group that has such a broad spectrum of interests represented on it, to make them experts in all of those areas, I think is going to be very difficult. I think it's certainly a situation where you can ramp up their activity quite significantly and make them experts and build up the institutional knowledge and memory over time, but that would take a very significant commitment on the part both of the citizen volunteers as well as staff to staff such a committee. So I think what I'm hearing is that it's working basically if the vacancies are filled as it was intended, which is let's go ahead and conduct the annual meeting, and if there are special issues that the commission sees a need to refer to the committee, that that certainly there is the ability to refer those matters to the committee to at least get their take, but that may not obviate the need to still have, you know, special ad hoc committees like at the airport or other facilities to provide more detailed input as well. Does that make any sense? I guess what I'm saying is,
keep going.
Well, one thought is we have workshops, and it seems like it's the role of a workshop like we're doing today to talk about specific issues and have a give and take with stakeholders, and so. I kind of wonder, is it a little bit redundant to have the PSAC doing what it is we're doing right now? I mean, are we doing it twice? Am I wrong? Right?
It's kind of like what I was almost trying to start to say, too, you know, because the PSAC is, if you're a new guy that got elected to be the new environmental guy, you'd have to read the whole strategic plan, and then you'd have to get up to speed on, and it'd be a bunch of work. And then you'd have a couple of meetings a year, and then you might be called on to weigh in on the AWOS or something. Whereas if we just go directly to the problem at hand, have a workshop, address it at the workshop, make sure that everyone knows that this workshop is going to be here by identifying stakeholders, that might be the most direct way and the way that doesn't frustrate the PSAC guy so much. Because I can imagine, you know, being frustrated on that having not enough meetings where you feel like you're ever up to speed, or else having too many that you don't feel you want to go, and this gets right to the heart of the issue, the workshop and the people that are affected.
Well, the past commission didn't allow public input like is happening today, which always struck me as extremely odd. I don't think it's going to be a matter of creating a redundant situation, because what we're trying to accomplish here is to make sure we're going to be making the most sound, correct decisions for our constituents for the port. And we can't always count on, you know, folks just show up. You know, we didn't know all these people were going to be here today. We've got, you know, gotten away knowing that, at least with the PSAC. You know, it has a bit of organization to it where you can count on them showing up, hopefully, that they're going to commit to it. So I think with, you know, with that comparison, I think it's very important that we do see through, that we get this going again.
I think what we'll do then.
There you go. Have a comment.
Just a quick comment here. To get the best possible input, we've got so many different segments of this whole port operation. So if you're going to have a PSAC group, it would seem to me that you need to have individuals that focus on specific areas like the airport, like Quilsane, like the boat haven. You know, obviously with people like Bertram and myself, you're getting input on the port, the moorage and whatnot, and other aspects. But some things like AWAS and whatnot, we don't get that qualified input. And we haven't heard anything from Quilsane. Then we got a major operation down there. So I would think you need to have select, if you're going to have a PSAC group, they need to be selected with individual expertise in local areas so you get the best possible input. You know, yourself, Pete, you're a pilot. So you know a hell of a lot more about AWAS than a hell of a lot of other people. And it directly affects you. When it directly affects you, you get more knowledge.
Right. Yeah, just to clarify, the way it's structured right now, at least in theory, is that the positions are kind of specific to interest groups. So you have port retail tenants, community environmental, pilots, airport tenants, marine trades, moorage tenants, and boat ramp users.
And Eric, I apologize, I don't know how.
Yeah. And then one each from the three commission districts. So the idea was to have a kind of a balance, a mix between expertise in particular areas and then a broader view from kind of representatives at large. Okay, so what I'm hearing is that there's a need to come back with some, after maybe speaking with each of you offline a little bit, back in a regular meeting with some specific recommendations. And that we're going to proceed with the 2014 meeting, but it sounds like there's still some question as to whether or not ad hoc meetings on a more frequent basis are necessary.
Well, maybe the success of the 2014 meeting will color how we how we're going to go forward.
Yeah.
If you can't get anybody to show up, that might answer our own question.
Right. I mean, it's a crossroads. I mean, you know, I. To me, there seem to be two alternatives in addition to the one that we're talking about here. And one was to significantly ramp up the committee's meeting schedule and charge, even if that meant reforming the committee and finding different appointees. Alternatively, it was to use more ad hoc committees on special issues as they arise, and then convene basically an advisory committee on once every 5 or 6 years to do a comprehensive review and revision to port adopted policy as necessary, rather than kind of trying to split the baby, which is what we have going on right now, where there isn't necessarily a need to do wholesale plan revisions on an annual basis. But we'll come back to you with some recommendations. And Brad, I'd like to talk with you about District 2.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
Okay, the last one, commission meeting procedures. Commissioner Hanke requested this topic be added to the workshop agenda. And we have the rules.
I think my only comment in kind of going off Brad's comment right here with public workshops is I would like to, there's a part, does everybody have a copy of this? Anybody want a copy of this? This is public meetings. And in part four, section D, it talks about a three minute time limit as far as comments go from the public in a port meeting. And I think that's appropriate. I think as far as workshops go, it's great to have presentations and do that. But I think it just seems like we're letting it go on and on and on as far as public comments go. And there's lots of other avenues to get our points across to, as far as an official port commission meeting goes, either meeting with staff, off time, just come into the office and meet with them, or do it with internet, or simply do it with handouts. But I would just encourage that, we kind of try and hold to that 3 minute
time mark. I thought about this a bit too. In fact, I went over this thing last night. What I was really trying to accomplish, and having been it's like Larry said, you can be a commissioner for 2 years before you really figure it all out. And so now I'm finished my second year, and it really was. I think it's a lot more useful to have a good open dialogue, and like the meeting we've had this morning, I thought was very valuable. Everyone got a chance to speak up, get their points, and you can have a to and fro. But in the business meeting, the business meeting is designed just so for the commissioners to take all the input they've got from things like this, and also from emails, and I'm trying to figure out, as soon as we get a communications guy on board, how to get those things out so that everyone else can see the comments that we get from constituents. And then the business meeting is where us three guys have to take all the input that we've got from workshops, from emails, and put them together and make a decision. That's not really the public debate hour. It's not the give and take time. The give and take time is now. Get the information. If you have a big long story you want to give them, because it's going to be detailed, do that either in person. We haven't, all the office commissioners share that office right back there, or give us an email. And then I think, like you said, the business meeting, which is distinct from the workshop, the business meeting is really just going to be the time where you actually will have two opportunities to comment. There'll be a comments from the general public, and it'll be a comments on agenda items. So you'll have two chances to make your comments be heard. But basically, the business meeting is just to legislate, to make the policy. The workshops are for the discussion and the getting things going. So that's the way we talked about it at the first two meetings. Well, the first two meetings in January, and that's what we got codified here. So I just need to be a little bit more vigilant. And
I think a good example is the last meeting, topic of garbage came up. We spent 20 minutes. There was one point I noticed where the audience was talking to each other, not even addressing the commission anymore. We were kind of this audience there for a while.
Yeah.
It's a valid topic. It was, let's put it on for a workshop agenda and work it up through the system. So.
One other comment I would encourage public too is there several times there I've seen in emails confusion as to what's going to be on the actual port agenda, and again, if we want something on the actual port agenda, contact your commissioner, contact staff, do it the week before, because the agenda is kind of being laid out that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday,
before 2 weeks from now on the whiteboard.
Right. And, and make sure your issue's on the actual agenda so that we can act on it.
So we're all clear, if there's something I'm not sure about, I'll call whoever the president of the commission is. And
that would be me.
Right. and ask, do you think this should be on the agenda or not? So a lot of the stuff is pretty mundane. If we need a lease approved or something, kind of just the normal business stuff. But
Bertram?
I understand where you're coming from, and I appreciate the need to streamline the meeting. And I think as long as there's a forum for open discussion, I think that's what's important.
Yeah.
The last commission was really abusive with the 3 minute thing, and people
the attitude of this commission is totally different and much more open to dialogue. We really I think that if this is the forum in which we would discuss these things in detail, then I think a greater effort needs to be made to actually flesh out the information in the workshop so that people have the time to prepare for it. I noticed that there was nobody in the audience had any of the court's data from their mortgage study. So if it's going to be inclusive, which I think is, this is a great forum for it, then you have to be able to also provide the materials and the heads up so that people are able to participate actively in it. And then I think the 3 minutes can work. But it basically works because you guys are much more open to it. And so with that attitude, things can work.
Well, in the past commission, I witnessed basically a time clock kind of approach, and I'd see somebody click the time clock and be watching, looking at their time piece while somebody's doing a presentation, which that in itself was, in my opinion, a little bit rude, and it makes the person that's trying to do the presentation, you see somebody look at the clock, say, oh, okay, that's it, and that's not what, in my opinion, that's really not what we should be, the type of atmosphere we should be presenting in a business meeting. If somebody has something, that's important, and it's pertinent to what we're discussing, if it runs, a little bit of time over the three, I don't think we should just that's it, and make them go away. I ask that we be a little bit lenient in that regard.
I think too, Bertram, a couple things. Sue, when we're putting together a workshop agenda or a main meeting agenda, that's posted on the website, right? And if something was going to be on the agenda like the week prior, would it be up on the website?
It goes up usually on the Friday before the commission meeting.
And then a couple of times a year, because of the calendar and vacations, it might be up Monday instead of Friday.
So if something wasn't on the agenda that somebody in the public wanted on the agenda, how would they figure out if it was on the agenda?
Then we suggest that they bring it up in public comments, not related to the agenda.
Okay.
And then if the commissioners feel that it is something that should be included on the next meeting agenda, then you guys would make that decision.
Okay.
That's how I...
Yeah, we'll get there in just a second. And then I just want to say one thing, too, that I really appreciate you saying that, Bertram, about how we're trying to be more open with this process. I will say you really should appreciate what the staff is going through in that, because by us being more open, it makes them more vulnerable as well. And so their workload has gone up seriously exponentially in, emails and records requests and all of that. Not that that's not part of what the port is supposed to be doing, but it has increased the workload a lot. And so I would just, as we do this open thing, I would just ask, be a little bit respectful that they're working too. They're working hard. And we'll just keep going the way it is, because I think it is good. I appreciate the open dialogue. I like that. So,
I'm sorry. What was your name again?
Yeah, Jim Heumann.
Jim Heumann. Go ahead.
I just want to say I think 3 minutes is fine myself for those comments. But I also wanted to suggest that perhaps you could have an email list for people that were interested that you would proactively send out, like agendas to people and meeting announcements and workshop announcements.
Yes.
It's easy to forget, the commission meetings are this and that, and is there a topic on there that I'm interested in? And I don't think it would be a lot of work for you to just take emails and shoot them out before meetings with the agenda so that people get reminded.
Exactly right. That Brad brought that up several months ago, and we actually hired a consultant, which I guess is going to be working with us shortly, I hope, because
yeah,
I haven't seen him.
Yeah, his mother had a heart attack, so we...
Anyway,
home, but that was one of the things our new website redesign is that you can sign up for
precisely what you said, Jim,
or alerts kind of thing. So,
I had one question though. One of the biggest frustrations was that when we present something at the last commission last year, 3 minutes, that was it. There was no comment. And I appreciate the fact that sometimes the commissioners have a follow up comment. Will that still continue? Like, if you have a question about what somebody says, you will, that will not be excluded by the 3-minute rule.
I guess I'm not sure what you're saying. In other words, if you have your comments and then we have a question, then you...
Yes. It's been great that you said, what do you mean by that?
Like I said, Bertram, we're a different group, so yes. Okay, we did it. And it's not even... Oh, it's 11! Okay, if there's anything else, if there's nothing else, I'm going to adjourn this meeting, this workshop. We'll reconvene at 1 o'clock for the business meeting.